tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice has met in Islamabad with Pakistan's prime minister and other top officials to discuss terrorism as well as other issues. Ahead of the talks, U.S. State Department officials said the meetings would include discussions on terrorist and militant attacks emanating from Pakistani soil. After Rice met with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif Sunday in Islamabad, the Pakistani leader's office said little about the content of the talks, noting that they focused on matters of bilateral interest as well as the future of Pakistan-U.S. relations. The interior ministers of Britain, France, and Germany have called for a special meeting of European Union interior and justice ministers within the next 2 weeks. It's to deal with the continent's escalating migrant crisis. The minister said in a statement Sunday they want to find concrete steps to solve the growing migrant dilemma. Meanwhile, Austrian police on Saturday pulled three children near death from dehydration from a van packed with 26 Syrian and South Asian refugees Saturday near the German border. Meanwhile, five men suspected of involvement in the deaths of 71 migrants found in a truck Thursday in Austria were ordered to be held by a Hungarian court. Australian Al Jazeera journalist Peter Gresty said Sunday that the sentences handed down to him and two colleagues on Saturday were politically motivated. He said Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi now has the opportunity to undo that injustice and pardon the three journalists. An Egyptian court found all three, Gresty, a Canadian national, Mohamed Fahmy, and Egyptian Bahr Mohamed, guilty of supporting the banned Muslim Brotherhood and sentenced to 3 years in prison. VOA News. Another U.S. Senator, Democrat Jeff Merkley from the western state of Oregon, declared his support Sunday for the international accord to bar Iran from building a nuclear weapon. Merkley became the 31st senator to say that he will vote next month in favor of the pact, moving President Barack Obama closer to a mathematical certainty that the deal will take effect. That deal was brokered by the United States and five other world powers, and it calls for international monitoring of Tehran's nuclear program. Tens of thousands of Japanese gathered near Parliament in Tokyo Sunday to protest legislation that would authorize the military to fight abroad for the first time since World War II. In one of the largest protests in Japan in recent years, crowds chanted "No war" and "Abe quit" as a number of police tried to maintain order. Meanwhile, police in Thailand arrested a suspect Saturday in connection with the bombing early this month that killed 20 people. There were some indication and documents found on that suspect that he might be from Turkey. But as VOA Steve Harmon reports, there's no official word on what the country of origin is for the suspect.
Obviously, because of the stack of what appear to be real or fake Turkish passports, there's a lot of speculation that the individual is Turkish. And one of the passports with his photograph, and the passport appears to be fake, I should hasten to add, also lists a Turkish name. But the authorities have identified him as a foreign man. They have not confirmed that he is indeed Turkish.
That is VOA's Steve Herman in Bangkok. Thailand's police commissioner says investigators looking into the August 17th blast at the popular Erawan Shrine are seeking a second man. Health officials in Sierra Leone Sunday confirmed an Ebola death less than a week after the country's last known patient was discharged from a hospital. Samples from the body of a 67-year-old woman who died recently in Cambia District in the country's north came back positive for the deadly disease, according to the chief medical officer, Dr. Brima Kargbo. Last Monday, the last known Ebola patient was released from a hospital in Sierra Leone. It was a milestone that allowed the West African nation to begin a 42-day countdown toward being declared Ebola-free of transmission. Authorities are still trying to determine whether the woman in Cambia died before or after that countdown began. And you can read more details on this and more 24 hours a day at voanews.com. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
When you listen to people talking and reacting on the radio station, you see that more than 90% agreed of the decision of the Constitutional Court. They said, okay, we are in a democratic country. We have to respect the rule of the country.
A court in Burkina Faso bars an ally of former President Blaise Compaoré from participating in the upcoming presidential election.
Troops of 25th Task Force Brigade discovered an improvised explosive device making factory at Miati along Maiduguri Blablindambwa Road here in Nigeria, Borno State, Nigeria.
The Nigerian military uncovers a major Boko Haram bomb making factory and arrests two members of the militant group who have details.
The spike is an unusual spike right now because it jumped in short time from a few hundred cases to the 404 cases, yet cholera is endemic in Tanzania. So as such, it's not a worrying situation, but it needs to be addressed.
And the World Health Organization and the Tanzania Health Ministry try to identify the source of a cholera epidemic. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Burkina Faso's Constitutional Council on Saturday provisionally cleared 16 candidates for presidential elections in October, but declared the nominee of ousted President Blaise Compaoré's party ineligible. Eddie Constance Kombuego, head of Compaoré's Congress for Democracy and Progress Party, was among six candidates barred from running, along with others linked to the former strongman's administration. For more on the latest development, I reached Issa Napon, a news anchor for RTB, the public radio and television station, Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou.
Blaise Compaoré's party, they have decided to launch what they call the civil disobedience. After that, nobody went out on protest. So yesterday, when they have been cleared again for the presidential election, they organized a meeting. But it was really sad because nobody was there. It was like 30% full, you see. So just yesterday, they have talked to radio and they said, okay, now they are going to respect the decision of the Constitutional Court.
Okay, so after the people failed to show up and people did not go to protest, they decided they are not going to respect the decision of the Constitutional Court. So in this case, are they going to have new members to represent them for the October presidential and legislative elections?
Because they have been asked to replace, they have like 2 days more to replace people for the legislative election. But for the presidential one, it's over now. And they are obliged now to like maybe support other candidates, but for the legislative election, they can replace the members who have been turned down with new and young people to run for it.
How are Burkinabes reacting to the fact that campaigns will soon begin and now they can go and choose their president after they protested and forced President Blaise Compaoré to flee the country?
Yeah, today the truth is people are really, really satisfied on how the things are going. Because when you listen to people talking and reacting on the radio station, you see that more than 90% agreed of the decision of the Constitutional Court. You know, and most of them, even belonging to the ex-majority party, they said, okay, we are in a democratic country. We have to respect the rule of the country, you know. And they asked their own peers to respect the law. And most of the people who called in radio station to react, they said, okay, if they won't respect the law of their country, they are outlaw, and they are going to show them what's going to happen now. So they decided now to respect and to follow what the majority of the population asked them to do a long time ago.
Are people satisfied with the way the transitional government is running the affairs of the country until elections are held in October?
And they're trying to do what they can. Their main objective is to hold the election. So that's what they have been doing so far. And they're trying to keep soldiers like turmoil out of what they have been doing since the insurrection arrived. So that's what's going on now. But the people are dissatisfied, like 50% or half of how the traditional government is running, you know, the country. We are really waiting for the presidential election, because if you don't have a new elected president, it will be very hard, because civil society is like accusing the government, no, you are doing what you don't have to do, because transition, they just have to calm down and organize the election, and then let the new president take the hard and big decision for the country.
Issa Napon is a news anchor for RTB, Burkina Faso's public radio and television station. He spoke with me from Ouagadougou. The Nigerian military has uncovered a major Boko Haram bomb-making factory after arresting two leading members of the militant group. Colonel Sani Kukashika Usman, spokesman for the army, described the discovery as an unprecedented feat, which he says demonstrates the military's determination to defeat the terrorist group. Usman also told me that the military is on course to meet the recent directive from President Muhammadu Buhari, which demands that the Islamic militant group should be defeated within the next 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. The troops of 25 Tax Force Brigade were the one when they were doing cordon and search operation along the villages of Sandia, Koka, Kowa, Inyaleri, and Mieti villages in Borno State. They discovered an improvised explosive device making factory at Mieti, very close along Maiduguri, Blablin, Dambua Road here in Nigeria, Borno State, Nigeria. And alongside quite a number of other equipment and weaponry that were recovered, I mean, from the factory. And in addition to that, the troops were able to capture two key Boko Haram terrorists, including an Amir. Amir is a more or less like a local emir or community leader within that environment and a high contact and one of their foot soldiers.
So is the army gathering intelligence after capturing them?
Yeah, exactly. We are gathering intelligence not only from the individuals concerned, but also of the equipment that we're able to recover and other things too.
What is the progress report so far following the recent order by the commander-in-chief, President Muhammadu Buhari, saying that within 3 months, Boko Haram should be completely finished?
Yeah, exactly. We are making tremendous progress in various fronts of the war. And, you know, hitherto there were some held territories by Boko Haram, for instance, Dikwa, Logomani, and all the rest. They have now been recaptured, and we are moving on towards Baga and, of course, Gambarungala. So, invariably, we are making effort to ensure that within that time frame, we are able to really defeat Boko Haram terrorists as well.
Well, some people have expressed concern that there are certain parts of the country, certain communities and streets where Boko Haram has been active despite the military oppression and pressure on them. So how do you intend tackling this? What effort is being done about this?
Just like I told you, a lot of effort is being done, and more so we have quite a number of personnel injected into the theater of the operation, quite a number of equipment and weaponry. But apart from that, actually there is intense pressure on the Boko Haram terrorists, not just by the Nigerian Army, but the Nigerian Air Force also, you know, bombarding them here and there. So you have a few of them that, escape and constitute nuisance to communities. But that notwithstanding, we're also mopping them up. And we are gradually kind of tightening the noose around them in Sambisa Forest. We are quite familiar about the dangers inherent between on the road between Maiduguri, Bulabulin, and Dambua. You know, because of this cordon and such operations, you know, people tend to be attacked. So we are trying hard to make sure that the roads are opened.
So when will the new multinational joint force begin its work after all the setup that has been done so far?
Well, already the multinational joint task force has commenced work in earnest. As you know, it has a headquarters in Germany, Chad. And on the part of the Nigerian side, we have a brigade dedicated, and other neighboring countries also are making effort, you know. But the synergy is something that we are working towards also. You know, more so we have the command and control center, and the Nigerian military has harmonized its command. You know, 3 and 7 divisions now, they are being harmonized by a kind of unified command where we have a whole corps, you know, in the battlefront. So automatically the multinational joint task force has begun work in earnest.
Colonel Sani Kukashuka Usman is a spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The International Organization of Migration, or IOM, says the number of people fleeing East Africa, Syria, and South Asia is getting worse. Europe has struggled to stem the flow of migrants. 2,300 have drowned in the Mediterranean this year, trying to reach Greece and Italy. VOA's Vincent Makori recently talked about the situation with a spokesman for the IOM, Itai Viriri.
Well, unfortunately, we don't see any end in sight because of what we have been saying all along, that there's lack of coordination amongst the European Union member states. We have called for a more coordinated approach in terms of dealing with the numbers that are arriving. So making sure that all those 250,000 or more that have arrived mostly in Greece and Italy can be spread on to the other countries in the rest of the EU. We're talking of an economic bloc with 28 countries. So the common sense will be that they will be able to share these numbers evenly. But what we're seeing so far is that quite a lot of these migrants are either staying in Italy or Greece, and very few are managing to continue on to go to countries like Germany, Sweden, or the UK.
Now, this has been going on for a long time now. What has been impeding any kind of concrete, comprehensive strategy or plan by the Europeans?
Well, some countries have not been very forthcoming in terms of taking up as many numbers as they could. So, for example, countries like Hungary have said that they are not interested in taking in numbers per capita, on a per capita basis. So that means that then the burden remains on the likes of Italy and Greece. And so far, we're seeing, the numbers that are trying to reach, say, for example, the UK, where the situation in Calais, you're only talking of a very, very small number comparatively, less than 5,000. And if you consider that Greece has received over 150,000 and Italy 100,000, then you can see the scale of the kind of support and assistance that those two countries need from the rest of the EU.
Now, Itai, is it just me saying things this way, or are these numbers increasing, at least in the last few months?
They certainly have. Normally every year, I would say in the last 5 or 6 years, the summer season is when these journeys, migrants make these journeys, because the sea is a bit calmer, not as rough and choppy as it is in the winter. So we always expect this to happen, but certainly the numbers are right now projected to be much higher than they've been in recent years. And already we've also been talking of high death rates, you know, of people trying to cross the Mediterranean. So far, over 2,300 have died, whereas the whole of last year, just over 3,200 people died. So, we were trying to sort of figure out how and why the numbers are going as high as there. Obviously, we're also looking at protracted conflicts around the world, with the addition now of Yemen.
Now, question is, do you get a sense of why people persist despite of all these tragic stories on the Mediterranean?
I think it's desperation. I mean, it just shows how desperate people are to get away from whether it's conflict or countries where there's human rights abuses, countries where there are, they just find that it's untenable for them to stay. So we speak to some of the people who make these journeys and those who survive the crossings, and they tell of situations where they feel they had no other choice. And I think that realization still hasn't reached some of the decision makers in Europe to really realize how desperate and you know, people have no other opportunity, or they feel that they have no other opportunity to survive. So you get that sense that even if they know what has happened to others who have not made it, or the difficulties of actually staying in Europe, because sometimes they're not guaranteed to be allowed to stay in Europe, they still would make the journeys anyway.
Itai Viriri is a spokesman for the International Organization of Migration, IOM. He spoke with VOA's Vincent Macquarie. The World Health Organization and the Tanzanian Ministry of Health are stepping up efforts to contain and discover the source of a cholera epidemic. So far, it has killed 8 people and infected more than 400 others. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The cholera epidemic, which broke out in the Dar es Salaam and Morogoro regions nearly 2 weeks ago, is spreading quickly. The Dar es Salaam region is the most affected, with 354 cases and 7 deaths, according to the World Health Organization. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer tells VOA the outbreak caught health officials by surprise.
The spike is an unusual spike right now because it jumped in short time from a few hundred cases to the 404 cases, yet cholera is endemic in Tanzania. So as such, it's not a worrying situation, but it needs to be addressed. And that's what's happening right now, as we understand, with the authorities and WHO.
Lindemeyer says WHO and the Ministry of Health quickly visited the affected areas to assess needs, and that WHO is in the process of urgently procuring laboratory reagents needed for diagnosis. He says the agency will provide medical supplies and chemicals to treat water and disinfectants. He says 5 treatment centers are in operation in Dar es Salaam and Morogoro, with authorities planning to open others. He says health officials see no connection with a previous, more serious outbreak in a region along Lake Tanganyika.
The cholera outbreak in Kigoma region, reported between May and July, related to the refugees coming from Burundi, at that time has been brought under control with no new cases from that area for nearly a month.
The announcement by Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, in April that he would seek a controversial third term triggered political violence that prompted tens of thousands of Burundians to flee to Kigoma in western Tanzania. The epidemic among the refugees resulted in more than 4,800 cases and claimed dozens of lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon said it's banning and destroying cheap vegetable oil imported from Indonesia and Malaysia to protect its home industries. The government says thousands of workers may lose their jobs if the country continues to import cheaper vegetable oil. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Aurelius Mbui, an official of Cameroon's agro-industrial company, the Cameroon Development Corporation, CDC, says the jobs of about 16,000 employees in 6 oil palm estates are threatened as a result of what he calls the unhealthy competition domestically produced refined vegetable oil faces. He says after examining the situation, Cameroon's prime minister ordered that imported vegetable oil must sell at about $3 per liter, which is about a dollar per liter more than domestic oil. If it does not sell at that higher price, it will be seized.
There were certain norms that were set indicating that oil that is imported in this country must be imported at a valued price of 1,500 francs, and that oil must be in specific containers, and it should have vitamin A. But of recent, we've noticed that oil has been imported at prices lower than 1,500.
Cameroon has a huge appetite for vegetable oil. Its own companies produce 32,000 liters every month, according to the Cameroon Association of Vegetable Oil Producers, and an additional 20,000 liters per month has been imported, mainly from Malaysia and Indonesia. Jacques Kemble Chagbu, Secretary General of Cameroon's Association of Oil Producers, says many people were rushing for the imported vegetable oil because it is so much cheaper than locally produced oil.
We cannot accept that. We have four factories which are closed now, and a lot of factory is working in something like 50% of the capacity because you cannot produce when you cannot sell.
Economist Dr. Ariel Njitedem of the University of Yaoundé 1 disagrees with the ban and says Cameroon should instead have made its vegetable oil more competitive and of good quality. He says the ban was hastily conceived and may anger the World Trade Organization, WTO, of which Cameroon is a member.
We cannot close our market to the rest of the world. That would be against the WTO regulations. That can allow other countries to refuse our product too.
Cameroon already has a 40% unemployment rate. Government officials say the decision to ban the imports was made in order to save thousands of jobs. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Segun Ademi from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos, and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sport, and for that, let's go to Lagos, Nigeria, and join Segun Ademi. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, August 30th. Kenya has made history by becoming the first African nation to emerge the overall winner of the two yearly World Athletics Championships. The East African nation finished on top of the medals table at the 15th edition of the championships, which ended today, Sunday, in Beijing, China. Kenya won a total of 7 gold, 6 silver, and 3 bronze medals to finish ahead of Jamaica with 7 gold, 2 silver, and 3 bronze medals, and the United States with 6 each of gold, silver, and bronze. Until this year's edition, Kenya's best outing was a second place overall finish at the 2007 edition of the championships in Osaka, Japan. In the first edition of the championships in Helsinki, Finland, in 1983, Kenya did not even appear on the medals table. Altogether, 8 African teams made it to the medals table at the just concluded 2015 edition. They are, in the order in which they finished, Kenya, Ethiopia, South Africa, Eritrea, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, and Uganda. Congratulations to Kenya, the overall winner of the 2015 World Athletics Championships, for this great achievement. In one of the highlights of the events slated for today, Sunday, the final day, African runners made it a 1-2 finish in the women's marathon. Mary Dibaba of Ethiopia won the gold in 2 hours, 27 minutes and 35 seconds. She was followed by Hella Kiprop of Kenya in 2 hours, 27 minutes and 36 seconds. Staying with the World Athletics Championships, perhaps one of the biggest flops at the event is Nigeria's captain and Africa's fastest woman, Blessing Okagbare. She failed to win any medal in her 3 events in Beijing. In this telephone conversation, I asked the spokesman for Team Nigeria, Olukayode Thomas, what happened to Blessing Okagbare.
I think basically what happened to Blessing is just anything that can happen in sports. She did well up to the semifinals. She had the joint second fastest time. In the final, unfortunately, she didn't get a medal. But if you look at it, in the last 3 or 4 years, she's been consistent, getting to the final and winning medals. So sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. It's painful for her. She's down, and everybody's trying to cheer up that, look, it's not the end of the world. There is Euro next year. Just get ready, prepare, and go for it the next time.
Nigeria won 1 silver and 1 bronze at the 2013 edition of the championships in Moscow. In the just concluded 2015 edition, the country did not win a single medal. Should we read any meaning to this in terms of the growth of the sport in Nigeria?
The truth of the matter is that in the last 20 years, we have not done anything in terms of sport development in Nigeria. All we have been doing is sport promotion. We want to go for major championships, we want to go for this. But the thing is, unlike in some other countries, the federal government don't see sport as a priority thing. And secondly, the corporate bodies in Nigeria, they only want to invest in finished products. But what we need to do, the basic, that is development at the grassroots level, intercollegiate and high school sports, is we've neglected them and is dead. And if you don't go back to what Akira did in the 70s that made us continental and global champions in the 90s, we'll still remain where we are.
Finally, Kenya has become the first African nation to emerge the overall winner of the World Athletics Championships. Do you have any comment on this?
I think Kenya has just won for Kenya, and Nigeria needs to do what Kenya has done to win for Nigeria. Let's look at what Kenya is doing. Let's look at what Uganda is doing and other small African countries. While they are winning medal in major championships, how Eritrea can produce the marathon winner, a 16-year-old boy that became the marathon champion? What did they do? Let's go back and look at what they have done and adopt those models.
I've been speaking with Olukayode Thomas, the spokesman for Team Nigeria at the just concluded 2015 World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Away from athletics, the stage is set for the resumption of the qualifiers for the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations. Day two matches will be played across the 13 groups next weekend, the weekend of September 4 to 6, that is. The first set of qualifiers were played between June 12th and 14th, 2015. Altogether, six matches will be played by each of the teams seeking to qualify for the tournament finals to be hosted by Gabon. Talking about the African Nations Cup qualifiers, the participating teams have started naming their teams for next weekend's matches, in addition to finalizing their preparations. African champion Ivory Coast has surprisingly left captain Yaya Toure out of its team that will take on Sierra Leone in Nigeria's commercial city of Lagos. Elephants coach Michel Dussier did not include the 32-year-old Yaya Toure in his 23-man squad for the group I clash, as the players ponders over his international future. Among the invited players are Thomas Toure, Mamadou Bagayoko, Adama Traore, and the local duo of Serge Nguessan and Jimo Sherif. Meanwhile, England-based forward Wilfried Bony has pulled out of the squad after sustaining an injury at training with English Premiership club Manchester City. For its part, 2015 Nations Cup runner-up Ghana has also named a 24-member squad for its Group C match against Rwanda. The coach Avram Grant-led Black Stars will play a friendly against Congo in Brazzaville on Tuesday before traveling to Kigali for the qualifier. Former under-20 stars Godfred Donsa and Ebenezer Sifua were handed call-ups. Andrew Ayew, who missed out of the first group match against Mauritius in Ghana due to injury, has also been named in the squad. Captain Asamoah Gyan will lead the team for the game. Ahead of the qualifier in Kigali, Ghana's opponent, Rwanda, beat Ethiopia 3-1 in a friendly game on Friday at the Amahoro Stadium in Kigali. In the game, Rwanda dominated and opened the score in the 18th minute. However, the Ethiopians never got deflated, and they started to push for the equalizer, which they got in the 41st minute. Rwanda scored two more goals in the second half to complete the tally. In a related development, Gambian coach Raoul Savoy has handed a maiden call-up to China-based forward Boubacar Traoré for the Group M qualifier against Cameroon on September 6 in Banjul, the Gambian capital. The 20-year-old prolific goalscorer was a surprise inclusion in the team's 24-man squad for the Day 2 clash with the four-time African champion. And Uganda coach Milutin Stredojevic has labeled his team's Group D qualifier against Comoros next Saturday the most important match of the campaign. The Cranes of Uganda beat Botswana 2-0 last June and share top spot with Burkina Faso, which beat Comoros by a similar scoreline also on the opening day. The Ugandans will be seeking to return with the maximum points from their trip to Comoros. Another team that has named the squad is Egypt, the most successful team in the history of the Africa Cup of Nations with 7 titles. Coach Hector Cooper of Egypt, which is in the same Group G with the Super Eagles of Nigeria, unveiled a 27-man solid team against Chad in N'Djamena. The Pharaohs kicked off their campaign for a place in Gabon 2017 with a thrilling defeat of Tanzania in Alexandria, while Chad bowed 2-0 to Nigeria in the northern city of Kaduna. Zamalek boasts of 10 players in the squad, while Alali has 8, with 7 foreign-based professionals making the cut. Still in Group G, coach Charles Nkwasa of Tanzania said he's expecting a tough match against the Super Eagles of Nigeria. But he insists that the Taifa Stars can spring a surprise against Sunday Olise's men. The Taifa Stars are rooted to the bottom of Group G, having lost 3-0 to Egypt in their first game of the qualifying series. Coach Nkwasa told Nigeria's Brilla FM a VOA affiliate, that his team is preparing well for the game against Nigeria, even while acknowledging the Super Eagles as one of the strongest teams in Africa. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now, sending it back to Peter Klute in Washington.
Thanks a lot, Segun. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports, Nightline Africa Sports.
Oh, Mario.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Lelo makambo lobi makambo na lembi e lelo bitumba lobi kosona e na baye e na boyi ko baby sanzoto na matanga na lembi e Mario na lembi e Mario na baye e
oh Mario nasi na peki sayo. Kulinga kapesi bazei na mbongo Yoka ndengi azariko kabayo Na mitema ya basi pe na mibali Yo moto zei na badiplom mitano Mario Sala kameme foro luka mosala Mario Pona nino zako baby saka usambu sakombo nobo Mario Ah, nalembi
Ba protinga na pakolaka Zotwe koma sembe sembe Oko pete ngana soka Lobi na swa maladi ya cancer Lobi tango na kokola yo kimi na ye Mario na ba ye Mario na lembi ye
Ba familia Mario bakanisaka Mario apesaka nga mosoro Nzoka nga moto na latisaka ye na leisaka ye na lalisaka ye Mario na lembi ye
Paizua ya biloko e
Bakuta kinga na yango
e Ikambo moke mosala kobo ma
biloko ya ndako e
Na somba Na lebie e Mario na baye yo Kene Mario na lebio
Mario Okutinga na biloko mombali mosusu a somba Oyoke lingia kofanga te Mario Oyoko ilingite olia na mesa Kaka soki zue kangyo na poitrine Oniaga kopeta ngai nako goma biloko Mario, sinasalisa yo mingi Diploma si mangamu nasalisa kiyo Mario Bongo leonga kumimwa si mabe Mario likambote Ah, mokilie, ezaka gaboye
Mobali akutinga na bomengo asengi ya komandenga na ndimi Mobali akutinga na bangenge asengi ya dirijenga na ndimi Nabandiko bimana ye,
babandiko penga ye, monsieur
Mario abimbi moto,
akanisi biloko nanga ye ye
Mario naba ye yo Kende Mario na lembi yo
Mario asongi epe ya baboti akuti mbeto na ye ya bomwana Eko mitangwa kola la mbeto mokuse makolo mila I Mario Mario na lembi e eh, e eh, e eh. Somba mbeto na baye e eh, e eh. e Mario na lembi e eh, e eh, e eh, e eh. oh.
Koyoka motema pasite na konga mokona futaka Ila mana sombela yo na tikeli yo souvenir ya bolingo Zalina lavage na kotinde la yo na bato Mario na lembi yo Kende na yo na baye yo
Mario Zoua loko la fusée, Mario.
Mario Mosala Kobete Nga Bana Di Koko Banango Ya Yo Olingo Beba Mama Mobokoli
Ako Bete Nga Nasua Epa Izua Ya Lokuta Epa Izua Ya Biloko Akuta Kinga Na Yango Ikambo moke mo sala kobo ma biloko ya nako era somba na paye yo Mario na lembio bima bima na paye yo oh.
Mario na lembo ngwali kelemba mitutu kumisatu na sombi Mercedes 190 na ibisi Mario moko mo suto bima toke no sa promenade toko mina nzela Mario binangai Yo zonga kotenga na zali na kumba fatu kuba mona ngamu na sombeli yango na ibisi Mario te ndapena na poso na kumba po eloko na sombi sika bato sibamo na penga na sombi to weli volanga na Mario Mario a tukeringa batu na nzete
zato ezali nano ya meme olingio baby sanga elongi ipare pasinyo sozwa kamosala ko baby sabango bilongi ke pananga na estope na lembi Mario papa na baye yo Kende na yo na lebi yo
Mario in rababu mzo bim Pusra matama na pomade Ateza mwindo ya motane Alinga kobala basi ya age na yete Alinga obeba mama mobokoli Mario Mario Balize zana yete Soki mama moboko ya bengani ye Akanga kobe biloko na liputa ye Babro sada Masini ya mandefu Kisanola Kul
Na bandiko bimana ye, babandiko benga ye, monsieur Mopale a bimbi moto, akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye Mopale a kutinga na ngenge, asengi ya komande nga landimi Na bandiko bimana ye, babandiko benga ye, monsieur Mario a bimbi moto, akanisi biloko na ngai ya ye Mario na baye yo Bima na yo na lemi yo Mema bila mana baye yo
Mario, a travers yo Na pesa baleke mususu toli Boko mi ko linga basi ya patopo na bambongo na bango Mobani ya salimbongo a pesi mwasi Yo kei, oke ko vande la ye po si disa yango Ah, yo Mario Okutinda ku apartement kitoko Biloko yi mutasombite Yo lali ovandi telephone television Oh Mario Kanisa ke mobali wa somba ki onpa Mona vipasi Likambo nini Mario Ah Likambo nalo bangu de zaite Ezaite
And that was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In the context of the huge human tragedy, relating to the immigration crisis in Europe, it is proper to pose the question, who speaks on behalf of the thousands of Africans that are languishing in the Mediterranean Gulf and encountering enormous difficulties as they march from Italy, Greece, Macedonia, Serbia, and Hungary in search for what they call a better life. It is understandable that neither the African Union nor African governments are willing to give any encouragement to the young men and women who leave their country in a perilous journey for Europe. I know of only one government, that of Eritrea, that has spoken out very strongly against the emigration. He has accused traffickers of encouraging Eritreans to leave their country and to join the emigration train. But now the problem is getting very, very, very bad. When one sees what happens in Calais and the difficulties that Africans and other immigrants face, or tragically, as we witnessed just last week in Austria, when two trucks were found with decomposing bodies of immigrants, it is time for Africa to pay attention. Of course, we know that even though there has been an immigration problem in the past, the dimension increased dramatically when Colonel Gaddafi was killed. And we must not forget that he died in the process of an ill-advised NATO operation in Libya under the guise of a Security Council resolution of no-fly zone. Today, Libya is in chaos with two governments. And in this context, these unscrupulous human traffickers have been using rickety boats and piling on immigrants who died in the Mediterranean and even dumped in Europe. And still, there are other human traffickers. So this is something where somebody has to speak on behalf of the Africans. Now, we have a situation now. The Europeans themselves cannot come to an understanding as to how to tackle this issue. Germany, Sweden, and to some extent, are more liberal. But the hardliners, the UK, are really opposed to any immigrants. In fact, UK has proposed that all economic, what they call economic migrants, should be sent back to their countries. Now, they could not undertake such a project unless there are African governments that are willing to cooperate with them. Yet there's still another ridiculous proposal that these rickety boats should be destroyed by military means at the source. Thank God no one has pursued that idea until now. But while the Europeans try to find a way out, Africa should not keep silence. Recently, when there was xenophobic attack in South Africa against immigrants from neighboring countries, many African governments spoke out clearly. They engaged the government of South Africa and they found some kind of a solution. Why are they silent in terms of Europe? Is it because they are so overly dependent on the largesse of Europe that they can sit silent where Africans are being treated in subhuman nature in Europe? I think the time is ripe for Africa to speak out in favor of those Africans, no matter how their views are about the nature of immigrants from Africa to Europe. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, sports editor Segun Ademi, and our engineer for today, Joe Gill, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, wisdom is like fire. People take it from others. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Fostering economic development in sub-Saharan Africa is a top priority of the United States, and the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, is the centerpiece of our trade policy on the continent. Government officials, business leaders, and civil society from African countries and the U.S. are meeting in Gabon's capital, Libreville, this week to discuss how AGOA, now 15 years old, can provide even more business and investment opportunities for Africa's people today and into the future. Statistics support a growing consensus in both Africa and the United States that freer trade and increased international investment are critical to spurring economic development and reducing poverty. The U.S. Congress enacted AGOA in May 2000, providing a wide range of African products duty-free access to the U.S. market. AGOA has succeeded in helping eligible nations grow, diversify their exports to the United States, and create employment and inclusive economic growth. By 2014, African countries' non-oil AGOA exports to the United States were valued at $4.4 billion, up roughly 250% from 2001. The growth of these non-oil industries has spurred an estimated 300,000 direct jobs in beneficiary countries. AGOA's success won overwhelming bipartisan support in Congress, which this summer voted to reauthorize the program for another 10 years. That underscores our nation's commitment to a stronger U.S.-Africa trade relationship and support for the region's long-term economic growth. The new AGOA legislation has an added clause, specifically calling for the promotion of the role of women in social, political, and economic development in sub-Saharan Africa. This acknowledges the vital role that women play as economic and civic leaders across the continent. Discussions during this year's forum will explore ways to build strong, export-oriented businesses and prepare African women producers to integrate more fully into regional and global supply chains. The 2015 forum will provide an opportunity to celebrate the recent reauthorization of AGOA, take stock of its successes over the last 15 years, look to the next 10, and launch a dialogue on our shared vision for the future of U.S.-Africa trade.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.